The Veterans Affairs Division will come to order, and we have a quorum. Would somebody like to approve the minutes of February 13th, 2015?
So hold, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis approves the minutes of February 23rd, 2015. All approved?
Aye.
Opposed? And we have several bills on the docket for today, but first, as tradition, we always have the Pledge of Allegiance. And we have a special guest with us today, and Representative Loon has brought his uncle with him. And if you would come forward and introduce Mr. Russell and give us a little feedback. And we're going to also ask Mr. Russell to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to introduce my uncle, Russell Loonan, who was a co-pilot in World War II on the bomber flights, flew for the 485th Bomb Troop out of Italy, doing missions into Austria. How many missions?
18.
18 missions into Austria, and was one of the lucky ones that was able to come back. And we thank you for acknowledging him there today. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mr. Representative Loonan. And Mr. Russell, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Okay, our first bill is House File 1106. Representative Davis, would you present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move House File 1106. And then, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the A1 amendment to get in the order that I'd like.
Representative Davis moves House File 1106 and the A2 amendment.
A1.
A1 amendment, I'm sorry. Any discussions on the A1 amendment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very minor.
Go ahead, Chair Davis.
Thank you, Chair Detmer. And House File 1106 is a bill that dedicates a percent of state procurements to business owners and disabled veterans. The amendment, members, was as a result of talking to the administration on some concerns they had, but it is still a work in progress. So we will, if this bill makes it out of committee, there will be more discussions regarding the bill as amended. So with that, I think there's some folks who would like to testify. That's simply what my bill does, very simple bill. I don't know if the administration wants to testify or the departments. We'll just let it go from here.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Davis. And we have a couple of people there to testify. Would you introduce yourselves for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Matt Kusky. I'm a vice president at Drexel Hamilton. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to address you fine people today. It's an honor to appear in front of you and to tell the Drexel story and my story and how this bill might help us kickstart our effort to be a meaningful job provider to disabled vets in Minnesota. For those of you that have not heard of Drexel Hamilton, we're an investment bank that's owned by disabled veterans and actively seeks to recruit disabled veterans who desire a career in high finance. Our chairman, Larry Dahl, was a Marine in Vietnam. He was a scout, was very badly wounded in combat operations. I think when he was pulled out of country, he had something like 30 bullet wounds. Clearly, we could be doing more to support returning veterans, but nobody had it worse than the Vietnam generation. Larry, being a Marine, though, didn't let that stop him and did very well for himself in commercial real estate in the East Coast. and eventually became chairman of United Bank, which is a position that he still holds. In 2007, Larry was sitting on some money and wanted to do something positive for veterans, came up with the concept of starting an investment bank that would let disabled vets work on Wall Street. Clearly, 2007 was not the best time to be starting a new investment bank, but our firm made it through the crisis. They brought in my boss, Jim Cahill, the president of Drexel, been on Wall Street for 35 years, came out of retirement to run Drexel. Jim lost his son on 9/11 and wanted to do something to give back to the first responders that answered the call after the towers went down. We've experienced incredible growth since 2007. We're up to around 100 employees now. Half of those employees are military veterans, and roughly half of those military veterans are service disabled from combat operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. I fall into that last bucket. I'm a West Point graduate, graduated in 2001, right into the teeth of the war on terror. I was on a machine gun range at Fort Benning, Georgia, when the towers went down. I invaded Iraq as a platoon leader with the 101st Airborne Division, was an infantry officer, and I fought there for the first year of the war. Came home and was selected for an Army scholarship program that sent me to law school while I was on active duty. Following completion of my legal studies, I was a prosecutor at Fort Hood for the last 3 of the 10 years I was on active duty, and then I was medically retired. I worked in the legal industry when I was retired initially for a brief time. Found myself out of work for a year, though. I have a young son. I married a Minnesotan. She's from International Falls. And we made the decision to move to Minnesota to raise our son closer to family. during the year that I was looking, Drexel found out about me. One of my classmates from West Point works there, and he reached out to me. And they hired me in December of 2013. And just to give you an idea of the kind of meaningful support that Drexel offers to military veterans, even though I'm in Minnesota and the headquarters of Drexel's in New York, they flew me to New York every single week. I'd fly out on Monday, work the week there, they'd put me up in a hotel, they paid for all my licensing, and then on Fridays I'd fly home to be home with my family. It's gone really well for me at Drexel. They've asked me to open a Minneapolis office. I don't know if this is widely understood, but there are more assets under management in Minnesota now than there are in Chicago. And of course, one-fifth of the U.S. economy is in the Midwest. So there's clearly a sound business reasons for us wanting to establish a foothold in Minneapolis. But I can also tell you from personal experience as a military veteran, this is a great state to come to once you're done serving. The VA system here is much more efficient. The culture is much more receptive. Minnesota Nice is a real thing, I'm happy to report. And I feel very good about planting the flag here and saying, come on, boys, if you want help, if you want a career in one of the best industries out there, come see me at Drexel. And this bill, if it's passed, will go a long way to helping us to hire in the state in more than just token numbers. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I don't know if you, class of 2001, you said. Did you come across my twin sons, Rob and Travis Stepmer?
Yes, sir. I actually know Travis and Martise very well. I'm friends with both of them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We have another testifier. Okay, please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Goodnow. I'm just here to answer any questions, technical questions on the bill.
Okay. Do we have any questions from the committee members? Okay, how about public? We have Department Administration. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Matt Shear. I'm the Legislative Director for the Department of Administration. And in looking at the amendment, I did want to thank Representative Davids for working to address some of the concerns that we had in the bill. There are two other brief comments I would like to make on the bill, about a historical perspective about how this preference program differs from some of the other preference programs that we have in statute and how it is a little bit of a departure from the way that we're currently handling things, both with respect to the veterans' preference that is part of the governor's recommendation and Chair Detmer's House File 151, as well as the Targeted Group Business Program. On lines 1.15 in the bill, I will bring your attention to a resident vendor. I just wanted to make clear, Mr. Chair and members, that a resident vendor does not necessarily entail a Minnesota headquartered business, which is where all of the other current programs are slated. So currently, if a business is headquartered in Minnesota, they're eligible for preference. This would open it up to businesses significantly outside of the state of Minnesota for a preference. So all of our preference programs are driven toward Minnesota-based companies. And then finally, the only other comment I really would like to appreciate, or say I appreciate Representative David's on lines, removing lines 2.12 through 2.17, the 6% carve-out is a significant concern for the department. Currently in statute, there's only one carve-out, which is a 25% carve-out for Minnesota-based small business, but there's no carve-out for a specific group. But I, in that same vein, I would also point your attention to 2.24 through 2.28, which also duplicates the 6% carve-out for professional and technical contracts. So that is still a concern for the department as well.
Okay. Any questions?
Yes.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, this is pretty new territory for me in lots of ways. But so I'd really like to understand what would it take to change the resident vendor to be consistent with our other statutes, and would changing that and the percentage bring it into alignment with what the governor wants to do? And to Representative Davids, what would be the objection to doing that?
Testifier? Well, Chair Davids?
So thank you, Representative Ward. And to the, both of those questions, these are both issues that the Department of Administration and the folks supporting this bill and I are having. So I think we have to get down to, first of all, basically what the governor will accept on it. And then I also have to figure out how it coordinates with Representative Detmer's bill. So we've got several moving parts around here, and I think we, Chair Detmer and myself and others, will have to sit down and put this thing together. But this is just a bill that, that gives, as I said, dedicates a percent of state procurements to businesses that hire disabled veterans. So that this is a work, this is a work in progress on this one, because we've got the chairman's bill, we've got this bill, and we'll have to put it together. And we're listening very closely to Governor Dayton, to his administration, to see if this can work.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want a clarification. Where does this bill go after list committee?
Representative Ward, it will be going to State Governor of Finance.
And Mr. Yes. Chair and Representative Ward, I did also want to comment that the department obviously is very supportive of service-disabled veteran businesses. And from that perspective, we do operate both the veterans preference in the state of Minnesota, to which Chair Detmer's bill addresses, but that a service-disabled owned veteran small business that was based in Minnesota would currently be eligible both for veterans preference as well as for the targeted group business program, which includes disabled owned businesses. So the other concern, I guess, that we have a little bit about the 6% carve-out is simply from the perspective that should there be a situation where a Minnesota-owned small business, veteran-owned small business, was competing against a company from outside of the state of Minnesota that happened to be service-disabled as opposed to just a or a non-service-disabled veteran-owned business, with the 6% carve-out, there may exist a situation where we would have to go with the business that is not from the state of Minnesota that was service-disabled in order to accommodate that requirement in law. So that's sort of another challenge or wrinkle, I guess, to the issue as well, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, you know, and as Chair Davids said, that's something that we got to sit down and work out the particulars, because I know House File 41 is going forward, and mm-hmm. we're taking a look at getting these Minnesota
veterans-owned small business is certified right within the state of Minnesota through the Department of Administration. So this is something we'll be working on, Chair Davids. Any other questions? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, to the point, and I, it sounds like you're getting it where it needs to be. I have a significant veteran-owned business vendor with MnDOT in my district, and it would, I'd be concerned if he had competition from any other, you know, outside man. And, you know, I say this as a disabled veteran, right? And so I think we need to be careful, and I'm glad you're working on that. And thank you, Representative Davids, for that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Purcell and the Department of Administration is, we're working closely together to make sure that we do it right.
Yeah. Any other comments from the public? With that, Chair Davids, would you like to renew your motion?
I will move it's referred to State Government Finance, Mr. Chair.
As amended?
As amended.
Okay. The House File 1106 will be referred to the State Government Finance as amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next bill is House File 243. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 243.
Representative Newton moves House File 243.
And Mr. Chair, I'd also like to move the A1 amendment that puts the bill in the order that I would like. Effectively, that A1 amendment does nothing but give MnDOT the time that they need to get the cards prepared for the identification cards.
Okay, Representative Newton moves the A1 amendment to House File 243. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Representative Newton, go ahead and addresses your bill.
Many states offer special access to state parks for military former military personnel who have been awarded the Purple Heart. What this bill does is it permits the designation of the Purple Heart on our military driver's license, on our state driver's licenses and state ID cards, which would give the holder of the card or the license plate access to the Minnesota State Park free.
Okay, if we have any questions from the committee. Yes, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to speak in favor of the bill, and I have a question. Representative Newton, is there a fiscal note? Did they give anything?
Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell, no, there's no fiscal note. What MnDOT told me is they go through, and that's why they had asked for this additional time, they go through every couple of years and prepare the driver's licenses. Already we have special designations on driver's license for veterans, for seniors, for 100% disabled veterans, and multiple others, and this will just be added to it when they redo the license, driver's licenses in 2 years, I think.
Purcell? Any other questions from the committee, from the public? Any questions from the public? Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Newton, just a quick question. Is this on the driver's license, or is this on the plate?
Representative Newton?
Mr. Chair and Representative Driscoll, this would be, could be both. If a veteran has a license plate indicating that he has a Purple Heart, that would be sort of prima facie evidence that he also has the driver's license that would have that as well. So they can be permitted in free into the state parks with either.
Governor Driscoll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to go back to Representative Purcell's comment about a fiscal note. I doubt that there's going to be anything major on here, but the Department of Natural Resources does remind us regularly that they do generate revenue from admit fees and things on this, and so I'm wondering if there is a fiscal note on here. It may only be a couple $1,000s a year as anticipated by them, but since our folks tend to sometimes get concerned about fiscal matters around here, and bills have been referred from committees in different places because of fiscal consequences. So I'm just wondering if there is a letter that says that there is no, or there's a letter that says, because you had said, commented that the department periodically looks at it and they don't think that there was. So I'm just wondering if there's actual verification, because again, we've had some conflict with that in the past and don't want to have any problems.
Representative Newton, is this a yearly pass or is it a daily pass?
Mr. Chair, it's a daily pass.
A daily.
Yes, and in terms of the fiscal note, there would be no additional cost. There might be some loss of funding, but there would be no additional cost. Oh, yes, there's also an annual pass, as you know, for some veterans who have 100% disability, or you know, we don't expect that there would be a fiscal note on this.
So it is the annual pass, Representative Newton, that we're talking about?
It can be either.
Either. Yes. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I'm not opposed to it. I just want to make sure that you get the bill to the House floor and somebody raises a question on a fiscal note or it gets along the way and you don't have that information. I just put that out as some things to put on your, maybe to double check and belt and suspenders approach on it. Thank you.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is with regard to wondering if it's required for a Purple Heart recipient to, in fact, have this on their license plate, or don't they have some other designation that they could show the guard and get in?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pugh, no, there's no requirement. You know, it's like many of the veterans who have been in Vietnam or the Gulf War, they are entitled to the plates. Our women veterans are entitled to license plates, and some choose not to have them. And also, you might have a veteran who has been awarded a Purple Heart, but he or she might choose to have a different license plate for indicating Gulf Service or National Guard or whatever.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I maybe didn't ask my question very well, but with regard to the driver's license, if a disabled veteran or a Purple Heart recipient doesn't have the driver plate and doesn't have the driver's license with this designation on it, is there some other document that they would have to present that they would get in for free to the park?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pugh, not really. You know, they could have the DD Form 214, which indicates that they've received the Purple Heart, but that would put an extra burden on the DNR. So we're leaving it up to the veterans to bring their DD Form 214 into driver vehicle services when they get their license renewed.
Representative Newton, if I remember, a few years ago we passed some legislation that if you showed your DD 214 when you go into a state park, mm-hmm. that you were admitted a daily pass. Now, and I don't see anybody here from the DNR, but
I don't either.
But I was a.
Yeah, perhaps Mr. Gilman can.
Within 90 days of discharge.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
It's within 90 days of discharge.
Within 90 days of discharge,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Any other comments from the public? Okay. Rep. Newton, do you want to?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion to move House File 243.
Rep. Newton renews his motion to House File 243 as amended.
As amended.
It will be going to the Minnesota and Outdoor Rec Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Representative Newton.
I like your bill. I've never had a chance to say that.
Representative Johnson, House File 545.
I'd like to House File 545.
And Chair Davids moves House File 545. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Representative Detmer, and committee, and thank you, Representative Davids, for hearing this bill. In my travels as a two-year legislator now, I get to chat with a lot of folks, and particularly where I live, I chat with a lot of veterans, and I chat with the agricultural community, and this bill is our attempt to bring those two communities together in a positive way. I know that veterans are having trouble finding employment, and I know a lot of veterans live in rural Minnesota. I also know that the agricultural industry where I live is challenged in finding people to work in the industry. And so this is an attempt to bring those two groups together. Today I've asked several people to come from my region to explain what we're trying to do with this bill, explain the need, and then explain how we seek to implement some training for veterans to get into agriculture. And I'll start with Mike McLaughlin from MACBE.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Mike McLaughlin. Served the United States Marine Corps, deployed in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom, and I come here to testify today on 545, not only as a veteran, but at one point an unemployed veteran, so I face some of the challenges coming from education into the employment field. Unfortunately, my personal story, we didn't have the veterans preference on the state level when I was getting out of school. But I live in rural Minnesota, Mankato area, and I don't think it's much of a secret. Veterans unemployment is starting to come down, but it's still higher than the general state unemployment. And anything we can do on the national and state level to help fast-track veterans in their transition from active duty employment, you know, from educational programs or into educational programs and employment, I think is a service the state should really pursue. So ag business is a big business in Minnesota. There's a lot of opportunity out there. And to help expedite veterans who are transitioning into that field and utilize some of the benefits they have, I think is something that will be for the benefit of many veterans to come. So.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Brad Slusher, and I'm a longtime agricultural educator, and I've worked at South Central College for the past 20 years as a teacher of agriculture, and then in the last 2 years in a more supportive role, and I serve as the dean of the Southern Minnesota Center of Agriculture. And Representative Johnson asked me to testify on behalf of 545. I'll share with you that South Central College is very, very much poised to provide for workforce development and focused on agriculture and to support our veterans that have served our country. At South Central College, we've got a long history of providing quality education for post-secondary agriculture as well as in farm business management. Faculty that are committed to educating agricultural entrepreneurs and employees in agribusinesses, and there's a significant demand. The enrollments in the agribusiness program over the past 10 years have doubled at South Central College in supporting Southern Minnesota agribusinesses. We're currently at about 140 students. In farm business management, for those that are entrepreneurs working on their farm operations, South Central College has farm business management education supporting about 540 farm families. And in 2012, the Minnesota State College University system agreed to and provided support for a Center of Agriculture in Southern Minnesota, and I serve in the capacity as dean for that leadership role. And our mission is to align students with the resources of academic institutions and the industry to develop and sustain workforce needs in agriculture, specifically in Southern Minnesota. We have a positive history of serving veterans in our ag-related programs. As a teacher of agriculture, I've been fortunate to work with many young men and women. I see more need for that. So I'm privileged to be an educator in the agricultural industry. I'm hearing increased demand for individuals to work in this important industry, and would consider it a privilege to coordinate efforts to accommodate veterans and the ask from industry for employed workforce that can support our rural communities. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
Well, I know that I know in Minnesota we have a shortage of ag teachers, educators in the state, and I think the only institution that produces our educators for an ag industry right now or in education is the University of Minnesota.
That's correct.
And I know I've been talking to some ag teachers in some of the school districts that I represent, and we're hopefully we can encourage more and more people to go into education and be ag educators. What happens is that when they do graduate, they're pulled into the industry, but there's plenty of ag jobs in industry too. So, but just a comment there. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. See, we have another testifier. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'm Doug Peterson. I'm president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. We're here to support the bill. We have launched a new program within Minnesota Farmers Union that would pretty much mirror a lot of the parts of the bill of that Representative Johnson has here. And I just want to support that, first of all, but also the pilot program that is identified within the program at Mankato at the college also, I think, can do a lot for veterans. I want to reiterate probably more than anything else is the need for this, and I don't necessarily like to read in front of committees, but I think this is important. A Minneapolis Star Tribune of February 2012 found that more than one in five modern-day veterans cannot find work. At almost 23% of Minnesota's unemployment rate for veterans who have suffered after September 11th attacks in the country's third highest. The state's rate is nearly twice the national average, representatives and chair, of 11.5%, and more than three times the state's overall unemployment rate, and that is just in Minnesota. The other good part of this, and I'm sure that the other witnesses know this, that the Farm Bill has $100 million, the five-year Farm Bill has $100 million put into it for veterans programs that would deal with CRP transitions, conservation program and training for veterans and preferences, microloan assistance for veterans, and outreach assistance for programs as priority value-added marketing programs. I think this is a tremendous step for Representative Johnson, plus the Department of Ag in 2014, I believe, had $100,000 put into a program for veterans, and in 2015, $200,000. So, Chair Detman and committee just stand in support for the bill and hope that this goes forward. It's a needed program in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. It's my understanding then that the federal money that's coming to the state then, is that funneled through what agency, what organization?
I'm anticipating that that will come through the Farm Service Agency. And some of it probably will come through the NRCS program because as it deals with Conservation Reserve Program. Those programs I'm anticipating that will be rolled out in the near future. There's still some issues on the implementation of the last five-year Farm Bill, but that's money that's Mr. Schlosser can probably answer that just a little bit more, but that's money that would be and anticipating that would be program that they would that they would have to apply for. Is that correct, sir?
There are funds that are available through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture for beginning a new farmer programs. What we're focusing on here is a little more broadly speaking, mm-hmm. for veterans that are interested in agricultural careers, not specifically for production agriculture, yeah. but to include production agriculture.
Now, I see this bill is going to be going to higher education. Is any of that money be going into higher education, or it's going to be heard in the next committee on higher ed?
Mr. Chair, this is considered a special, that this would be a specific program on in addition to what higher what Ms. Hughes is doing with its larger budget request.
I'm just looking at the language here. The Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State College and Universities for the purpose of establishing veteran agricultural pilot programs. So
yeah, Mr. Chair, it would be an appropriation to Minsky.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other comments? Yes, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to all of the testifiers. Can you tell me, I'm delighted that it's going to be potentially in other places besides Mankato, so it can be distributed around the state and be more accessible to people perhaps who need to go part-time or overtime. How quickly is all this going to happen? Quick reading of it right now, I don't see that there's a timeline. Could you help me understand just what's the plan?
Testifier.
Chairman Detmer, Representative Ward, I can assure you that there are institutions that already offer ag-related education throughout the Minnesota State College University system, have relationships already with them. There's a Northern Center of Agriculture, referred to as AgCentric, working in collaboration just about on a daily basis, a couple times a week with them, and we're in lockstep on these types of efforts. As I understand, fiscal year 16, so, I mean, it's already in place. We're recognizing the importance. We're making connections, and we've got over 400 educators specifically in agriculture, despite respecting the fact, Chairman Detmer, identifying that we've got a shortage of ag educators. Educators certainly respect what our veterans have done, and anything that we can do to support these types of efforts would be supported.
Mr. Chair?
Representative. Yes, Representative, go ahead.
Yeah, just to add to that, and Representative Ward, the first year is the planning and really designing and starting to implement it, and then we've asked South Central to do that, and I think Mr. Schlesher has made it clear they're ready and raring to go. But what's nice is in the next year, in the second fiscal year, in 2017, $600,000 is allocated and would include at least, I believe, up to six programs throughout the state, including one in the metropolitan area, because we know that there's a lot of veterans living in the metropolitan area, and a lot of what we're trying to do in this and other things are trying to get Minnesotans who aren't necessarily producers or on the farm, but access to this really dynamic industry. In this case, we're specifically, again, targeting veterans.
Representative Ward? Okay. Representative Hancock?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you've answered some of the questions, but it looks to me, I'm just concerned when we have general fund dollars. This is not going to a baseline budget to the universities. This is more of a one-time pilot project. Is there any thought to how it would be funded if this project takes off? Is this something that's going to be funded from the state, or do you think there's some agricultural entities that might pick up some of the cost of that ongoing?
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hancock. I share those concerns always as we're seeing things, but my first response is this is an opportunity to jumpstart a response to a need, and those two needs that I described. In terms of ongoing funding, if you look at the second page, the coordinators are asked to look for grants and other funding from available federal, state, local, and private sources. And I think you've recognized what I've observed is that the ag community is very adept and agile at finding private financing, and then what Mr. Peterson described was the Federal Farm Bill also has financing available. In that, I'm confident that Mr. Schlosser and others involved will be able to see that, and there's high probability, or possibility that additional funding could be secured not only to keep such an effort going, but to expand it as needs are developed. This is one of those. It's a pilot program, and so we will learn as we go. And again, I've found that the folks at South Central and in the ag education community are quite adept at meeting needs and changing focus in order to meet those needs.
Any other comments?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One follow-up, not necessarily pertaining to the finances. That was a concern, and I think you adequately addressed that. The programs for a 4 to 8 week program that awards a certificate of completion. What does that really certify in terms of if I'm a farmer, in a corporate farmer? What does this indicate in terms of knowledge or How does it benefit me necessarily that this person has received that training?
Chair Deber, Representative Hancock, Brad Slusher responding. I recognize the importance of the certification for a veteran that's interested in agriculture. It could be as direct and as prompt as assisting a veteran with commercial driver's licensing. That type of certification would be very valuable in the agronomy industry. As soon as we get the wheels turning here, spring of 2015 and other springs, it may be more in-depth depending upon the background and the information or the expertise of the veterans that we're working with in this program. Probably working out those details. We've got the right people to do that, educators in agriculture, as Representative Johnson indicated. We can certainly figure that out. Typically, certificates are between 30 credits or 60 credits or degrees. It really depends upon the prior experience. I think it's more about exposure, creating awareness. The agribusinesses that I've had multiple conversations with on these types of topics would be very interested in trying to clarify what we would need.
Don't mean to take too much time here, Mr. Chair, but thank you, Mr. Chair. In that regard, are there programs out there now for non-veterans that would offer the same thing to the general public? In other words, we're gearing this towards a veteran, and we're designing a program that where the certificate has value to the employer. I'm just guessing that there are probably certified completion programs that are already out there that would assist in the development of that to the veterans. Could you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Mr. Slusher? Certainly will. Brad Slusher responding. In anticipation of this opportunity to share today, I did some background work and discovered that as a veteran leaves their service to our country, they go through a process of transitioning, and they find out from their education what would align with other institutions. In the state of Minnesota, specifically in the agricultural industry, we've really not identified. So, for instance, if you're a wheel mechanic or if you're a helicopter mechanic with one of the military branches, those same skills are transferable into the agricultural industry. And there is, it's called transferology, there are some software that can assist our veterans with transitioning in. One of the number one thing that I will need to do with the educators is to bring them together, work with the right people that can do a proper assessment for our veterans, and to identify what kind of skills can you bring along, what kind of credit for prior learning do you have, and then how do we continue on. To answer your second question, there are existing programs for citizens of the state of Minnesota specific to agriculture, preparing them for the industry. We have not had as much success in communicating to our veterans populations, and we're definitely recognizing that here in this conversation.
Representative Hancock? Now, on all of our college campuses, we have centers set up on college campuses for veterans. I know the state funds these positions. I'm trying to think of the name of that position, but they're on campus. They're to help veterans with their helping with what their benefits and what they qualify for, getting in courses. And I look like we got somebody here that would like to make a comment there.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, those are the Veteran Resource Centers.
Could you introduce yourself?
Mike McLaughlin, okay. Mr. Chairman. Veteran Resource Centers, and there is actual regional educational coordinators that are employees of the state there that work. And that's more or less a liaison between the veteran and the universities. They do help navigate some of the programs and grants and systems that are out there and refer to other assistance programs. But I travel a decent amount in the lower 40 counties of the state for what I do, and I wouldn't say there's a well-established one in each university or community college throughout the state, at least what I'm seeing. I know Minnesota State and Mankato has a large one. Southwest State has one. Winona State's got a cubicle. And Rochester Community College, a technical college, has a decent-sized one. But some of the community colleges don't don't have those facilities available. They do have that educational coordinator that makes various outreach trips there throughout the week, but that's the resource you're talking about.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from the committee? Any comments from the public? Representative Johnson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this, we would like to have an amendment to the bill, and I don't know if you have a 24-hour rule that would preclude us from doing that today, but it's a definition. If you look at line 1.22, you'll see where we've identified in the bill as written the Farm Business Management Program. That's really narrower than what we want to apply here. That should have written the Southern Minnesota Center of Excellence for Agriculture, which is the umbrella organization at South Central College, which handles all the agricultural education at the school. And so that would be more appropriate. We can possibly do that in the next committee stop, but if you want to be efficient, I'm just offering expressing the need for the amendment.
Yeah, Representative, I don't have a 24-hour rule in this committee, but you could have an amendment made up for higher ed committee. You could do that too.
Okay. Yeah. Anybody want
to? Mr. Chair, could we take that as a author's amendment?
Representative Newton, why don't you repeat your amendment? We could do it right here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 1.22, after campus, remove the words Farm Business Management Program and replace those words with Southern Minnesota Center of Excellence for Agriculture.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
So it will be after campus, Southern Minnesota, repeat that again.
Southern Minnesota Center of Excellence for Agriculture.
So after campus, this would read, you take out Farm Business Management Program and put in Southern Minnesota Central of Excellence Program for Agriculture. Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair
Davids.
I would move House File number 545 as amended to higher ed.
Chair Davids moves House File 545 as amended to higher ed. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Deal.
From DNR.
House File 961. And Representative Deal, welcome to the committee, and I will move House File 961 to get it before our committee. And go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and member. House File 961 came from a constituent request and then further constituent requests from up in the Silver Bay community, where the chairman is quite familiar with the community and the Minnesota Veterans Home. And a local citizen, who the chair is also very familiar with, has purchased a farm in Finland, Minnesota, about 8 miles from the Veterans Home. And he has turned that in, at the goodness of his heart, he's turned it into a veterans retreat for the outdoors. And when I say a veterans retreat for the outdoors, he built a special lake, as small might it be, but large enough to fish on, and got a permit from the Department of Natural Resources to stock it with brook trout and brown trout, of which veterans from the Minnesota Veterans Home in Silver Bay are taken up there by the Veterans Home bus, and they are backed up to the fence that he's installed around, and they come out in wheelchairs. And the day that I was there was one individual with one arm fishing for brown trout, and he caught a fish, and of course he was holding the pole, but he couldn't reel it. So an assistant from the veteran's home held the pole, and he reeled the fish in. And then after they were done fishing, they went up to this constituent who built this farm, this veteran's retreat, went up to his business in Finland called a restaurant in Finland, and he fixed up the trout, and he does this routinely for the veterans that fish on those given days. Also, he has built on the side of a nice hill, he's cleared off the hill and put in food plots to attract deer in, and then he built a special facility, small building. I don't want to make it sound like the Senate office building, but it's still fairly large. Anyway, he built this building so that he could put a veteran in a wheelchair or a disabled veteran or any veteran for that matter in there, and under the supervision of someone from the veteran's home would be able to take a deer during the regular deer firearm season and buy a license and participate in the deer hunt. This has been going on for quite a while. Well, if you deer hunt, you know that something that elaborate, probably a buck, one of the reasons he gets large horns is because he's not dumb. And they don't come into that food plot with any regularity because they know that's a danger zone. And so he contacted me this summer, the constituent, and said, I contacted the Department of Natural Resources and asked them to issue to someone a couple of antlerless doe permits so that these veterans up there would have some chance of harvesting a deer. And the local regional guy checked with the local other guy and on down the line, and the answer was no. So I contacted Assistant Commissioner Meyer and asked him, I said, this really doesn't feel right to me. What can you do? Well, mark it in the book. They did it. They passed a special rule, published it in the register, and they issued two antlerless doe permits to the Minnesota Veterans Home in Silver Bay. And subsequently, anyone who was a resident of the, under that proposal, anyone that was a resident of the Veterans Home could hunt with a firearms deer license on a specific piece of property, township, section, and range, and take an antlerless deer to up to two. And so the season progressed, or began, and they took one antlerless deer of two. I think, really, up in my district, the deer are almost an endangered species right now, so that was quite a victory, actually, to get one. But so that brought us to today. So I came to, and I informed the chairman that I was going to take a look at this. And so I drafted a very, very narrowly crafted bill that is not before you today. The bill that I crafted said that it would limit each veteran's home, of which there are five in Minnesota. I believe that's correct. I think the chairman could tell me if I'm right. I believe there are five. And it affects somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 to 1,000 people. But we were going to limit it to five antlerless deer permits, to each veteran's home. And it would have to be conducted under the direction of the veteran's home on a specific piece of land, township, section, and range. And only the veteran himself could take the deer. So I drafted the bill, I gave it to the department. Uncharacteristically of me, I usually just submit the bills, I don't ask the department, but uncharacteristically of me, I asked the department for their opinion, and they came back with this language. And this language, in essence, allows for any resident of a Minnesota veteran's home to obtain a firearm or muzzleloader deer license during the regular season and to take antlerless deer without a permit in all areas of the state open to the regular firearms and muzzleloader deer season in any permit area. And I was quite surprised by this. But this would be the position. But their position is that it's not going to have any great effect, that there aren't going to be that many take advantage of it. And for that matter, I'm not even sure if other veterans' homes currently, at least, are conducting hunts like this. I just know that they do in Silver Bay. It goes on in the bill, if you read the language, that a veteran home resident during the firearm season will have to take the deer, and it cannot be taken by the person assisting. So it would be only the veteran that could actually do the work of taking the deer. So this is, I did not compromise on this language. This is their language. They said that would work for them. I said it's, in its essence, it's broader. I am really interested at the end of the day for the advice of the committee and getting this to move forward so that veterans that are are going to participate in this have some opportunity to take a deer beyond a buck who probably in this instance won't walk into a food plot and be shot at. So I'm happy with the language. I'd be happy to go to more restrictive language if it suits the committee. But that's the whole story.
Yeah, Representative Dill, and I guess as a committee I need to disclose that my wife and I do own a little place up in Silver Bay, and I have fished that little pond up there with the members from the veterans home up there, and I've had to reel in the fish. It's quite an experience taking the veterans out there in their wheelchairs, many of them, and this bill takes it another step farther, I think. And the fact they could come in our backyard out there, we have 7-8 deers at a time out in our back right in town. I think they know it's safe to be around town. But
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I actually had in the original bill the legal description of your backyard for the taking of the deer. I thought that wasn't the best legal description that I could come up with, considering you live in town there. So,
back the city.
So, I'm happy that we moved out into the countryside down there.
Representative Dale, the city has actually passed a law in the city that you can't feed the deer anymore because people were actually feeding the deer, and the yards are just being overrun by them. So, yes. Any other comments from the committee? Any questions or from the public? Okay. Well, I will then. House File 961 will be referred to Mining and Outdoor Recreation. And all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion.
Thank you, member.
Well, we're done. With that, meeting is adjourned.